We want to talk about the resignation of Merrill Lynch Chief Executive Officer E. Stanley O'Neill in the wake of that company's losses. Until yesterday, O'Neill was one of three African-American CEOs running Fortune 500 companies. Today, Merrill Lynch is looking for a new chief executive. Derek Dingell is executive editor of Black Enterprise magazine and author of the book Titans of the BEHE 100, Black CEOs Who Redefined and Conquered American Business. Welcome. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Nice to be here, Michelle.
So, Derek, did you see this coming?
Once we saw, and we've done a lot of reporting on this, once we saw that there was a report of write-downs of $8.2 billion, which was a greater write-down than the $5 billion write-down on Morgan Merrill Lynch debt, we saw that there was a possibility that there would be a call for firings. But in terms of Stanley O'Neill being the one who would be on the chopping block, that wasn't discovered until all the other, it's almost like a perfect storm developed in terms of the downwriting of the writing down of the bonds, as well as his talks with Wachovia for merger. And then the
his talks, which apparently weren't disclosed to the board or appropriate members or enough members of the board.
Correct. And then what was really, the blow was the drop in the stock price, which had dropped from October 5th to October 26th. There was a 21% drop in the Merrill Lynch stock price.
So there really was no chance that he was going to survive this.
No, there wasn't a chance.
And forgive me for asking, it may seem like an unsophisticated question, but do you think that his ethnicity had anything to do with this?
I think in this case, no. I think in Wall Street, it's one day you're a hero, the next day you're damaged goods. As early as July, the stock price for Merrill Lynch was at $95 a share. By October, it had dropped down to $59 a share. In the second quarter of this year, he was lauded for the profits that he was bringing in to Merrill Lynch. Stanley O'Neill, from 2003 to 2006, had annual profits of $5 billion each year, annual profits of $5 billion, and that's after turning the company around, after it had suffered losses of $3 billion in light of the meltdown, the stock meltdown in the late 90s and the early part of this century.
Okay. Well, talk to me, if you would, about Stanley O'Neill. Tell me the Stanley O'Neill story. He has quite a remarkable background, doesn't he?
Very remarkable. We first identified Stanley O'Neill as a comer in 2000. That was before he became CEO in 2001. He has risen up through the ranks in terms of finance. He worked at General Motors and became CFO there.
But he was even an assembly line worker there at one point, wasn't he?
Assembly line worker. His father had worked at General Motors as well. He came to Wall Street, and he used the same focus and the same exactness in terms of his work style and in terms of his attitudes to right the Merrill Lynch ship. He was a no-nonsense player. I think what had happened, and this had been another part of his undoing, is that he didn't make a lot of allies and friends. When he came into Merrill Lynch and became the president and CEO, he saw that there needed to be some changes. He cut 23,000 employees and changed the Merrill Lynch culture. Before he was CEO, Merrill Lynch had been known to be called Mother Merrill, which meant that it was a company where you could stay. It was very clubby. There was no layoffs, and he changed the equation. And as a result, he made a lot of enemies, and some of the people that he ousted in management and elsewhere still had shares of Merrill Lynch. They were still shareholders. They still had the air of other influential people within the firm. So that presented a challenge for him.
Do you think that any executive who came in and tried to achieve that kind of radical paradigm shift would have been vulnerable, or do you think that his demographics perhaps enhanced the distance that his others felt, or made it harder for him to achieve allies? Or maybe it's just his personality.
Yeah, he just had he really had a real direct personality. He was one that he did handpick people on the board, but he was really businesslike in terms of his approach. He had a very an inner circle, a very small inner circle, and he wasn't clubby. I think one thing that was interesting about Stanley O'Neill that is different than some of the other CEOs, when you look at a Ken Chenault of American Express or a Dick Parsons of Time Warner, they have gone out of their way to reach out to different divisions to develop a consensus to make sure that other voices are heard. In terms of Stanley O'Neill, he was pretty insular. You know, he listened to his own voice and he moved according to his own strategy.
Do you think that it meant anything to him to be one of only three CEOs of African American CEOs of Fortune 500 companies?
Oh, I think it meant a great deal, especially from his rise from Alabama to what he has achieved. But I also think he was someone who saw his duty as increasing the value of Merrill Lynch, and that he wasn't going to take a long time, resting on his laurels.
Mm-hmm. He was also Republican Eagle. He was a big fundraiser for the Republican Party.
Yeah.
You've written about a number of African-American business leaders. That is, after all, what you do. I mean, Black Enterprise is, I would argue, the preeminent business magazine that focuses on these issues. And what does his rise and subsequent fall, do you think, mean for future business leaders? What lesson do you think people will draw from his career?
I think the lesson that people will draw from his fall is that regardless of whether you're the CEO or you're rising to the upper echelons, you have to develop a base within the corporation of support. You cannot overlook the culture, past cultures of the company when you're making changes. You have to listen to employees. And conversely, you have to spend time reaching out to the press, especially when you're in a high-profile position such as the CEO of one of the world's largest financial institutions.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was very close to the press, unlike someone like, and I go back to Dick Parsons because I think he's a perfect example. He's someone that was able to, Dick Parsons, someone who was able to communicate with Wall Street, communicate with the press. He's open. He listens to his employees. And with all the turbulence in Time Warner, he's managed to maintain a great deal of respect and popularity, actually.
And you're saying O'Neill didn't do that. He largely kept his own counsel.
He largely kept his own counsel. He mm-hmm. had a focus. He wanted to first right the ship because, of course, we're out of control at Merrill Lynch. He wanted to break up the clubby environment. He was extremely competitive. Mm-hmm. He saw that Merrill Lynch was losing some business, particularly in the bond area, to Goldman Sachs. And that's why he became much more aggressive in mortgage-backed securities.
Okay.
And that became his undoing.
All right. Derek Diggle, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you for your insights.
Thank you for having me.
Derek Diggle is executive editor of Black Enterprise Magazine. He joined us from his office in New York. Thanks again, Derek.
Thank you very much.